Hi friends, just a reminder that neither Jody nor I are physicians and none of the following should be considered medical advice. Also, in this rapidly developing situation, the best source of information on your community and the regulations and recommendations that apply is your local health department. If you're listening to this in the future, first of all, congratulations on being in the future. Second of all, just know that the beginning of 2020 was a complicated time. Now, please enjoy the theme song by Jonathan Colton. DNA, you're in my heart. DNA. Hi, and welcome to episode 7 of BioBreak, a conversation with your friendly neighborhood biologist. I'm Andy Walsh, and I'm joined as always by my wife Jody.
Hi there.
And we have a special guest with us this week, our daughter Sadie.
Hi.
Sadie, tell the good folks a little bit about yourself.
I'm 13, I'm in 7th grade, and I like to bake.
Okay, what have you been baking lately?
A couple days ago I made brownies, and a few weeks ago I made baked Alaska.
For folks who don't know, what's a baked Alaska?
It's like some sort of cake layer with a bunch of ice cream and then covered in meringue.
And so you're enjoying quarantine because it's giving you lots of time.
Sure.
Okay. So we thought that folks are probably getting tired of us talking about coronavirus, and that it might be good to talk about some other sort of biology for a change. And something that lots of folks have been doing because they're stuck at home and because grocery stores have been short on bread and or yeast is making their own bread at home and making their own sourdough. So we thought we'd talk a little bit about the biology behind all of that. A lot of baking we generally think of and cooking as maybe, if you think of it at all as being scientific, maybe think of it more as chemistry and physics and, you know, heat and temperature and all that sort of thing. But there's a lot of biology in food because a lot of food used to be living things. And in particular, there's a lot of biology in things like sourdough because you have to keep something alive for an extended period of time to make the bread. So we thought that would be a good, an interesting topic to talk about.
Have you ever had sourdough, Sadie?
Maybe.
I was just thinking because it's not something
exactly know what it is.
It's sourdough bread. It's not something we usually have in our house because it's not usually gluten-free.
Right.
But I didn't know. My experience with sourdough was the bread bowls in college.
Yeah.
Not very healthy because you're eating a whole huge thing of bread.
But it's bread.
But I didn't know if you've ever had
Think so.
Do you know why it's called sourdough?
Because it's sour.
Exactly. Dough. It's sour. And that sourness comes from the bacteria in the culture that you use to make it. So, do you want to talk about...
Do I know about sourdough?
Yeah.
I don't, apart from like, it's this thing that people make and name and keep alive and share. That's the extent of what I was never a huge bread baker apart from, you know, when we had the bread machine and then becoming gluten-free. It's kind of depressing to make bread.
Okay. So we're all learning. So we've made bread and pizza dough and things before with a packet of yeast that you get at the grocery store. And that is called baker's yeast. That is a particular species of yeast. Saccharomyces cerevisiae. I might not be pronouncing that exactly right. I've mostly just read it in textbooks, but or S. cerevisiae as it's often abbreviated. So that's a specific species of yeast that we put in pizza and bread doughs and other things to make it rise. And that's kind of dried, and then that's why you have to activate it so that it can sit on the shelf for a long time. So it's living yeast, but in a sort of inactivated or dormant state, kind of like hibernation. But sourdough is made with a living culture of yeast, typically. You can also dry it and make it dormant also, but it's often you've got a living culture going in your refrigerator or on your counter or something like that that you have to feed on a regular basis and keep going. And it is a combination of bacteria and yeast living in that culture, typically.
So how do you feed it?
Yeah, generally you just put flour and some water in. So you start it with flour and water, and then you take some of that out and add fresh flour and water and just sort of keep that going as a culture. And you can take that out you know, that mix some of that into your dough when you're ready to make bread from it too. Yeah. And when, you know, in the Bible, when it talks about yeast, that's probably more what they're thinking about is some kind of living culture that they're keeping going and mixing into the bread dough, as opposed to dry powder that you would mix into something.
Well, how would you measure it out then?
Yeah, so you know, the options are anything ranging from you eyeball it from experience to, you know, you measure out. When we saw them making sourdough on that one program, they were weighing out a specific quantity of the culture and then adding a certain amount of flour and water to that by weight to make the dough.
Now, I think, because I know that you write a weekly blog post and you were talking about science experiments, I know that one of your topics was on, this week's topic was about science experiments you can do at home, and one of them was getting yeast, because we've been to the grocery store and yeast is hard to find these days, and I actually heard why.
Please, share.
Well, one of the news programs was saying that the people who make yeast, you know, they plan their season around the holidays, because everybody does all kinds of baking for, you know, winter and, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas and all those things. So, like, they have the bulk of their yeast already and processed and at the stores for then. And then they notice that as winter ends and, you know, people get, you know, the weather gets nicer, people are outside more, they don't produce as much yeast, they're not shipping as much yeast to the stores, and so they were not exactly expecting the country to be on lockdown and have to stay home and figure out what to do with themselves. And so that's why, you know, they haven't been able to kind of ramp up production in the same way as, you know, they have been able to do with other things. So it's been pretty hard to kind of find yeast, at least in our area, it seems.
Right. Yeah, so the nice thing about sourdough is that you can start it from without having to have a packet of yeast. You can start it because, as it turns out, there are yeast and bacteria all around us, as we've discussed before. And so you can start with those rather than having to buy something specially made. So let's talk, why do we need the yeast in the bread? Do you know, Sadie, what the yeast is doing?
Because it makes air bubbles in the dough, and that causes it to rise and be fluffy.
Yeah, so those little bubbles in the bread are pockets of, do you know what specifically, beyond just air?
Carbon dioxide?
That's right. It's carbon dioxide. And when you're using baker's yeast, those yeast are making the carbon dioxide. They take sugar and eat the sugar and metabolize it, or basically burn it, just in a very controlled way. They're oxidizing it to turn it into carbon dioxide and water. And that carbon dioxide bubbles out as a gas and forms little bubbles. And the gluten in the dough helps to keep the dough together, and so it holds those bubble shapes. And that's what causes it to rise and to be nice and fluffy, like you said. Yeah, so that's what the yeast are doing. In sourdough, there is a combination of yeast and bacteria generally in the starter. And depending on the species that are involved, the yeast are still doing that job of making the carbon dioxide to leaven the bread or to make it rise. And the bacteria are providing some other things. So we said that it needs, that the yeast needs sugar, that they're eating sugar and turning that into carbon dioxide. Do you put sugar in bread dough or pizza dough when we've made that? Do you remember?
I think I've put it in bread dough, but not like a ton.
Yeah, so in bread dough, you might put, in some things, you might put a little bit to feed the yeast. Here, though, there's actually sugar. So you're not putting sugar in your starter. You're not feeding the culture sugar. You're feeding it flour. And the bacteria break down a sugar called maltose. So the flour has maltose in it.
And is that used to make malted milk?
It is related to, it's called maltose because it comes in malts. And that's, where we get the malt that we make and put in malted milk. And it's in other grains as well, including wheat. And so the bacteria break down the maltose, and then the yeast turn that into glucose, and then the yeast eat the glucose and turn it into carbon dioxide. So in most cultures, you need both to do that. And there are these starter cultures that people have kept for decades and decades. They keep feeding them and keep growing them, and they've had the same sort of symbiotic combinations of maltose-eating bacteria and yeast that can't digest maltose. So the baker's yeast can digest maltose, which is why you can just do that on its own. But the yeasts that you find in these sourdough starters often can't eat maltose, and so they need the bacteria to make them food. So there's a whole food chain going on just in that starter culture.
So then with sourdough bread, can it taste like drastically different than depending on where it's made? Like if somebody starts bread in California, is that going to taste different than if it was started in, New York or in Texas?
Yeah, so different starters can give different flavor profiles to the bread that results. And so that's one of the reasons why people maintain different cultures and are interested in different cultures. And that sourness comes from the bacteria as a byproduct of breaking down the sugars and things. They're making lactic acid and acetic acid. Acetic acid is the main thing in vinegar. And so, that has kind of a sour taste. Those acids in the bread are what give it that sour flavor. And depending on which species of bacteria are in the starter culture, you get different amounts of acid and different ratios of lactic acid and acetic acid and other acids. And so, you can get different flavors. So the other question is we started talking about where do the yeast and the bacteria come from if you're not adding that little packet. And so there was actually a study that was done just a couple of years ago. So how is this for a science experiment? So they took flour, the same flour, and shipped it to chefs or bakers in 14 different countries around the world and told them to make their own sourdough starter following a standard recipe. And then they baked a loaf of bread and brought that bread with them to Belgium. So they all these bakers from all over the world got to fly to Belgium and presumably share each other's loaves of sourdough bread. And they were testing several things. So they were testing to see what kind of bacteria and yeast would show up in the sourdough cultures that these different bakers started. And they were testing to see if the bread that came out was different. And so what they noticed about the bread was that it had different acid profiles and different acid and sour tastes. That was the main difference between the different kinds of sourdough bread. And what they noticed about the yeast and the bacteria was that, a large number of the strains of bacteria and yeast that they saw actually were originally in that flour that they had mailed out. And any flour that you buy off the shelf, any flour that you get is going to have some bacteria and some yeast in it because they were living on the wheat when it was processed and got mixed in during the processing stage, or maybe came from somewhere else. So some amount of the those a significant portion of those yeast and bacteria were coming from the flour originally, and that's, you know, also where it can come from if you make your own starter. And then another thing that they saw was that there were some species that were unique to each baker's loaf, and those, or each baker's starter rather, and they could find those on the hands of the bakers themselves. So they swabbed their hands when they came into the lab in Belgium and looked to see what was growing. And so they had unique species on their hands. And so one of the interesting questions that they can't fully resolve, or it looks like actually there's a little bit of both going on, is did the bakers have those bacteria and yeast on their hands and mix it into the starter and the bread when they made it? Or are they getting that out of the bread that they and the dough, because they're always working with it? And it's probably some of both, because the species that they had on their hands was different than what we typically find on people's hands. So the fact that they are bakers means that they have sort of unique biological markers about their body. Like, their bodies are different because they bake bread.
That's tough, because I don't really want to think too much about the bacteria that is just always on my hands, even though, you know, in the back of my mind, I know it's there.
Sorry. I actually have a question, but it kind of changes the...
It's okay.
That's fine.
So, could you use gluten-free bread to start a sourdough thing and make gluten-free sourdough?
Yeah, so that's a good question. In principle, you could, right? It's flour and water is all you need, and so you could use gluten-free flour. And presumably there are microbes in those kinds of flours as well. They'd be different, and it would probably be different depending on what kinds of grains or other things the flour is made from, right? So some of the gluten-free flour is almond flour. That's going to have very different microbes growing on an almond tree than on wheat, versus maybe, say, rice flour, or I don't even remember all the different...
rice flour, potato flour, almond flour, usually.
Yeah, tapioca sometimes.
Yeah, sometimes tapioca flour is in it.
Yeah, so those would all have microbes, but they might be different microbes. And that might actually be an interesting experiment to try
to see. Yeah, it sounds like this is what this week's quarantine experiment will be.
Fun!
Yeah, and then, you know, what happens is that you start out, if you're making a fresh starter, you have to kind of grow it and start it for a few days or a week or two until you can actually use it to bake bread. And one of the things that you're doing is you're selecting for the microbes that are going to help, that will grow well in those conditions. So there's a lot of microbes on in the flour to begin with, and in the air and on your hands or whatever. But you want those few that are actually going to grow in that starter culture environment. And so by kind of feeding it and growing it over weeks, over days or a week or two, the bacteria and the yeast that grow over time will be the ones that really can thrive in that specific environment compared to all the other things that, you know, were just kind of floating around in the air.
So how do you know if you're growing stuff that'll be edible and not stuff that will kill you? Because we've had stuff growing in our refrigerator.
We have?
I'm just being silly.
Everything that I've read didn't seem to, you know, there didn't seem to be a concern. You know, you're taking bacteria that were already in, and yeast that were already in the flour, and just sort of amplifying them. And so if there was something that was going to be harmful, that would have been an issue, whatever. Also,
so then it's like a sealed, you put the flour in a sealed container.
Yeah, you generally cover it, you know, when you're, after you mix it all together. Yeah, so it's not open to the air all the time.
Okay.
And the, you know, you're also, baking, you know, the bread when you're done.
Yeah.
And so that's going to kill it. You know, that doesn't, resolve all issues, but that's, you know, going to help with other things as well. But actually, you know, one of the things that they found is that these starter cultures are, actually sort of resistant to contamination. So because the bacteria and the yeast that you're culturing actually kind of keep out everything else as well. They create antibiotics, and some of these acids that they're making to deter other bacteria from growing in there. So they're making a very acidic environment, and not all bacteria grow well in an acidic environment. And so you are actually preventing some of these other things that might potentially be harmful from growing in there. And just the fact that they're sort of, there's a lot of them and they're eating all the food makes it really hard for other things to come along. Same, and in fact, you know, a lot of these species, the bacteria are commonly lactobacilli species of bacteria. That's also a common species in our gut. And that's a common species in yogurt. We talk about active cultures in yogurt. They're often lactobacillus bacteria. And so these are the same thing that they're doing in our gut of kind of occupying all the space and making sure that harmful bacteria don't have a spot to grow. They're doing the same thing in that starter culture of kind of leaving no room for harmful bacteria to have a purchase. And so they found that, you know, again, these starter cultures that have been going for decades have the same species growing in them for decades. And they resist contamination, even though, you know, they're being kept in a sort of commercial baking environment that's not entirely sterile, right? Uh-huh. I mean, they're doing their best and they're not trying to contaminate it, but they're also not working with like laboratory or medical grade conditions of making sure that they're using sterile technique. And that's, you know, it works and it's fine and we're all okay. So you can, I mean, there are certain smells that you can kind of use as somewhat diagnostic, right? You want it to have that sort of yeasty bread smell to it. You can kind of tell that the culture is, you know, you can, and that's one of the things that they describe in the process of developing these cultures is what to look for, and that it will change several times over the course of those days and weeks until you get to something that is what you want. Color is also diagnostic. Basically, if it changes color, you want to get rid of it and start again. And then, yeah, you know, kind of the final proof is in the, can you put it in bread and get it to grow? And sometimes you can and sometimes you can't.
Does it sound like something we want to try?
Maybe. It's not going to kill us.
I think we should try and do one with regular flour and one with gluten-free flour.
And see the difference?
Yeah. What do you think? Since we have plenty of regular flour, too.
Mm-hmm. Sure, we can give that a try. Yeah, you know, we're going to have to feed it regularly to give it more flour to keep it going. And so that may be an issue with the...
Hopefully it eats its food better than Pippin eats its food.
It's a whole other conversation.
Yeah,
any other questions or baking advice?
So do you realize...
Oh, no.
Since we're setting up this experiment, we might need to have you back on. Would you be willing to come back on?
Maybe.
And talk about our bread-making experience?
Maybe.
See if you can pencil it into your calendar.
You gotta type it in, but maybe.
All right. And, yeah, if anybody else at home gives it a try, too, we'd love to hear from you. And maybe that's a good place, you know.
If you have a starter, take a picture of it, share it on our Facebook page.
Yeah, so we're on BioBreak.
So we can have a visual idea of what we're going for here.
So, the Facebook page, you can search for BioBreak. At BioBreakPod on Twitter. Or biobreakpod@gmail.com. These are the ways you can get in touch with us. And let us know how your sourdough bread turns out. And if you try gluten-free or some other sort of variation, that'd be cool too to hear about.
If you have tips for somebody who's never done this before, please share.
Absolutely. All right. Happy baking, everybody. And we'll talk to you next time.
Wash your hands.
Don't touch your face. DNA, you're in my heart.